A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the state of Android rooting, specifically what's happening with the Play Integrity API, making it harder every year to use banking apps or Google Wallet on a rooted phone. He's pointing at the cat and mouse game between Google's detection and the Magisk module's spoofing community. And he's asking the big question, has rooting had its day? Should power users just move to a different operating system entirely? And then the darker side. What happens when someone wants to unroot and discovers digital fuses have made that basically impossible? What do you recommend for someone who's already rooted and wants a way back?
This is one of those topics where the technical reality has gotten genuinely grim, and most of the enthusiast forums are still in denial about it. Let's start with the Play Integrity API, because that's the mechanism driving most of the user-facing pain right now.
Which replaced SafetyNet, if I'm remembering right.
Well, not exactly, but yes. SafetyNet was the older attestation API, and Google deprecated it in favor of Play Integrity starting around 2022, with full migration essentially complete by mid-2024. The key difference is that SafetyNet was a relatively blunt instrument. It checked for basic system integrity, bootloader state, and whether the device was CTS certified. Play Integrity is far more granular. It returns three labels: device integrity, basic integrity, and strong integrity. Basic integrity is the easy one. Is the device running genuine Android, not an emulator, not obviously tampered with? Device integrity is where the bootloader check kicks in. Strong integrity requires hardware-backed attestation. The device's trusted execution environment has to cryptographically prove the software stack hasn't been modified from the factory image.
Three tiers of paranoia, and rooted devices fail at tier two.
Right, and increasingly apps are demanding strong integrity. Google Wallet requires device integrity at minimum, but some banking apps. Barclays in the UK, several of the major Indian banking apps, a bunch of European fintech players, have started requiring strong integrity, which is essentially impossible to spoof because it relies on hardware key attestation. The private key never leaves the secure enclave. You can't extract it. You can't fake it.
Which makes the Magisk module approach feel a bit like bringing a squirt gun to a firefight.
It does, but let's give the Magisk community credit where it's due. They've been remarkably creative. The Universal SafetyNet fix, which evolved into the Play Integrity Fix module, works by intercepting the attestation process and substituting a fingerprint from a certified device that hasn't yet been blacklisted. The module essentially tells Google servers, I'm a Pixel 6 running the stock ROM, while the actual device is running a custom kernel. The problem is, Google maintains a constantly updated list of known fingerprints, and when a popular fingerprint gets burned, thousands of devices suddenly fail integrity checks overnight.
Like a mass eviction notice.
That's actually exactly what it is. There was an incident in late 2025 where a particular Pixel 7 fingerprint got burned, and within about 6 hours, the XDA forums and the Play Integrity Fix GitHub issues page exploded. Thousands of users suddenly couldn't use Google Wallet, couldn't open their banking apps, couldn't authenticate with their work profiles. The maintainer scrambled to push a new fingerprint, but that one lasted maybe 3 weeks before it was burned too.
The cat and mouse framing is accurate, but the mouse is getting tired. What happens when Google decides to just close the fingerprint substitution loophole entirely?
That's the thing. They're already moving in that direction. There's been talk in the Android security community, and I've followed some of the commits in the AOSP Jarrett about moving toward per-device hardware attestation that binds the attestation key to the specific silicon. Not just, this is a Pixel 9, but this is Pixel 9 with serial number X, and its bootloader was unlocked at this specific timestamp. When that becomes the norm, fingerprint substitution becomes useless because the server will expect a unique attestation chain per device.
At that point, the rooted user community is basically done on stock Android.
For anything that requires play integrity at device or strong level, yes. Which brings us to the prompt's big question, is rooting dead? Has it had its day?
I'd love to hear your answer, but I'll frame it this way. Rooting was always a means to an end, not the end itself. The end was control. Control over your hardware. Control over what software runs on it. Control over what data leaves it. And the question is whether there's another path to that same destination.
I think we need to separate rooting into two different things. There's the practical, everyday rooting that people did to remove bloatware, block ads system-wide, tweak the UI, get better battery management. And then there's the principled rooting, the I own this device and I will run whatever code I want on it position. The practical case has been weakening for years because stock Android got good. Samsung's One UI, Google's Pixel experience, they're polished now. Bloatware is still annoying, but it's mostly uninstallable or at least disableable. System-wide ad blocking can be done with DNS-based solutions or a local VPN filter without root.
The principled case?
The principled case is stronger than ever, but it's also harder to act on. The fact that Google can remotely decide whether your banking app works based on a server-side block list, that's exactly the kind of thing that should make people uncomfortable, rooted or not. But the practical reality is that most users who rooted for principled reasons are now facing a choice between their principles and their ability to pay for groceries with their phone.
Which brings us to the prompt's other question. Should we just move to a new operating system entirely?
This is where I get excited, because the alternative, OS ecosystem, has matured enormously in the last 2 years. GrapheneOS is the obvious starting point. It's a privacy and security hardened Android fork that supports Google Play services in a sandboxed compatibility layer. No root required, no bootloader unlock after installation, and it passes Play Integrity because it runs on Pixels with a locked bootloader post-installation.
Wait, locked bootloader after installation? How does that work?
Pixels let you relock the bootloader with a custom OS installed, provided the OS includes verified boot support. So you flash the OS, relock the bootloader, and the device boots a hardened version of Android with full verified boot, the same cryptographic chain of trust that stock Android has, but you're not running Google's code. It's elegant, and it means you get Play Integrity passing at the device level because the hardware attestation shows a locked bootloader and verified boot.
That's the kind of thing that makes me think Google doesn't actually hate alternative operating systems. They just hate the security liability of unlocked bootloaders. If you can relock it, they're fine with you.
That's a generous reading, but I think it's more accurate to say Google's security model is built around verified boot, and anything that breaks that chain is a threat vector. They don't care about your custom ROM as long as the hardware can attest that the software hasn't been tampered with. But here's the catch. GrapheneOS only works on Pixels. If you've got a Samsung, a OnePlus, a Xiaomi, you're mostly out of luck. Samsung's Knox platform has its own hardware-backed attestation, and if you trip the Knox eFuse, which happens the moment you unlock the bootloader, it's permanent. No relocking, no Knox, no Samsung Pay, no secure folder ever again.
Which is the perfect segue into the dark side the prompt asks about. The eFuse that can't be unblown.
Let's talk about Samsung Knox specifically, because it's the most aggressive implementation. Samsung devices have a physical eFuse, an actual hardware fuse on the system on chip that gets blown when the bootloader is unlocked. The moment that fuse is blown, Knox permanently marks the device as compromised. You can flash back to stock, relock the bootloader, do everything by the book, and the fuse stays blown. Samsung servers know. Samsung Pay will never work on that device again. Secure folder is gone. Some enterprise MDM solutions will refuse to enroll the device. And the resale value plummets because buyers can check the Knox status.
It's like a digital scarlet letter.
It's worse than that because a scarlet letter is at least visible. Most buyers don't know to check Knox status. They buy a used Samsung, try to use Samsung Pay, and it fails with a cryptic error. There are whole threads on Reddit of people discovering they bought a previously rooted phone and can't get basic features working.
The prompt asks about unrooting, and you're saying on Samsung devices. Unrooting is a cosmetic procedure. You can make the phone look stock, but the damage is done at the silicon level.
And Samsung isn't alone. OnePlus has their own implementation, though it's less draconian. Some OnePlus devices let you relock and restore full functionality. Xiaomi has a waiting period now. You have to use their My Unlock tool, wait anywhere from 72 hours to a full week, and even then, they've started limiting how many devices you can unlock per account per year. And the prompt specifically mentioned OnePlus, which brings up something Korn and I have discussed before.
The eFuse mechanism on OnePlus devices. I've called it one of the most aggressive anti-consumer mechanisms I've seen, and I stand by that. The thing about OnePlus is they marketed themselves to enthusiasts for years. Never settle, developer-friendly, bootloader, unlocking encouraged. And then they silently baked in hardware attestation that permanently degrades the device if you take them up on that offer. It's the bait and switch that stings.
The broader industry trend is toward what's called hardware-backed attestation by default. Google's been pushing this through the Android Compatibility Definition document, the CDD, which requires devices shipping with Android 14 and above to support hardware-backed key attestation. By Android 15, which is what most new devices are shipping with now in mid-2026, the requirements got tighter. The writing has been on the wall for years.
For someone who's already rooted and is now discovering their banking app won't work, what's the actual path back? The prompt asks specifically about unrooting and derooting.
It depends entirely on the device and the manufacturer. Let's break it into tiers. Tier 1, Google Pixel. You can flash the factory image, relock the bootloader, and you're back to a fully stocked device with full play integrity and all features working. The Pixel is forgiving in this regard. Tier 2, some Motorola devices, some Nokias, some older OnePlus models, you can flash stock and mostly recover, though you might lose some warranty coverage. Tier 3, Samsung. The Knox fuse is blown and there is no recovery. You can flash stock, relock the bootloader, and the phone will function as a normal Android device, but Knox-dependent features are gone forever. Tier 4, some newer OnePlus devices, some Xiaomi's, and a handful of others where the bootloader relocking process itself can brick the device if not done in exactly the right sequence.
That's the nightmare scenario. You try to go back to stock and end up with a very expensive paperweight.
It happens more often than the forums admit. The issue is that modern Android devices have a chain of trust that starts at the boot ROM and goes all the way up through the bootloader, the kernel, and the system partition. If any link in that chain doesn't match what the hardware expects, the device won't boot. When you've been running a custom ROM with a custom kernel and you try to flash stock, sometimes the partition layout doesn't match, or the bootloader version is incompatible with the stock image you're flashing. Or, and this is the really nasty one, the device has been updated over the air while rooted, and the stock firmware version you downloaded doesn't match the bootloader version on the device.
You're playing firmware, Jenga?
Firmware Jenga, where losing means a dead device. And manufacturer recovery tools, Samsung's Odin, Xiaomi's Mi Flash, the Pixel Repair Tool, they've gotten better, but they're not foolproof. If the device is hard-bricked, meaning the bootloader itself is corrupted or the partition table is scrambled, no software tool is going to fix it. You need a JTAG interface or a direct eMMC programmer, which is beyond what 99% of users can do at home.
Let's talk about the recommendation. The prompt asks, essentially, what do you tell someone who's thinking about rooting today, or someone who's already rooted and wants a way out?
I'll give the honest answer, and it's going to make me unpopular. If you're thinking about rooting today, in June 2026, and your goal is to continue using banking apps, Google Wallet, streaming services that check for DRM, or any enterprise app, don't. Just don't. The cost-benefit has flipped. 5 years ago, rooting gave you tangible benefits with manageable downsides. Today, the benefits are smaller, and the downsides include permanently losing access to services that are essential for daily life.
I'd go a step further. If you're the kind of person who wants root-level control, and I get it, I really do, buy a Pixel. Not because Pixels are the best phones, but because they're the only phones where the rooting and unrooting process is clean and reversible. You can experiment. You can flash GrapheneOS if you decide to go the hardened route. And if you change your mind, you can come back to stock with no permanent scars. That's not true of any other major Android manufacturer.
If you're already rooted and discovering these issues, if your banking app just stopped working because the latest Play Integrity update burned your spoofed fingerprint, you have a few options. Option 1. If you're on a Pixel, flash stock and relock. Clean, done, move on. Option 2. If you're on a device with permanent fuse damage, accept the limitations and use workarounds. Access your bank through the mobile website instead of the app. Carry a physical wallet, which, honestly, is not the worst idea anyway. Use a secondary device for apps that demand strong integrity.
The secondary device approach is underrated. A cheap, unrooted, stock Android phone that lives in your bag and handles banking and payments. Your rooted device is your playground. It's not elegant, but it works.
Option 3 is the nuclear option, the prompt hinted at. Switch operating systems entirely. And here I want to talk about what's happening outside the Android ecosystem, because it's relevant. The Linux phone landscape has gotten interesting. The PinePhone Pro is still around. The Librem 5 USA is shipping, and there's a new entrant, the Fury Phone FLX1, which runs a Debian-based mobile OS and launched earlier this year. These devices don't have Google Play services at all. They don't have Play Integrity. They don't have any of the attestation infrastructure we've been talking about.
They also don't have banking apps, or Google Maps, or any of the Google ecosystem the prompt specifically says some users are dependent on.
And that's the trade-off. A Linux phone gives you absolute control, full root, full file system access, run whatever you want, but you're living in the mobile web for everything. Some people are fine with that, most people aren't. The prompt acknowledges this tension. For those who have become dependent upon the wide range of tools and apps Google offers, is there any hope? The hope is bifurcation. Except that one device can't do everything anymore. If you want root, you sacrifice the Google ecosystem on that device. If you want the Google ecosystem, you run stock. The era of the do-everything rooted phone, the one device that had root access and passed safety net and ran all your banking apps, that era is over. Google killed it, and it's not coming back.
There's something almost nostalgic about this. I remember when rooting felt like unlocking a door to a bigger room. Now it feels like opening a door and discovering the room behind it has been walled off.
That's the architectural reality. And I'm going to borrow a framing here. Daniel's been learning about architecture from Hannah, and one of the things they've discussed is that architecture is a functional discipline, not just aesthetic. Google's security architecture is functional in exactly that sense. It's not designed to be pretty or user-friendly. It's designed to create a specific trust model, and that model says the device owner is not the root of trust.
Which is philosophically offensive and technically impressive at the same time.
That's the tension. And it's why I think the rooted Android user community is going to split. Some will move to Pixels with Graphene OS, getting privacy and control without triggering the attestation tripwires. Some will keep their rooted devices as secondary hobby phones and carry a stock device for daily use. Some will migrate to the Linux phone world and accept the app gap. And some, probably the majority, will just stop rooting and run stock Android with whatever privacy mitigations they can layer on top.
Let's talk about those mitigations, because I think that's where the practical advice lives. If someone decides rooting isn't worth it anymore, but still wants as much control as possible, what does that look like?
Shizuku is the first thing I'd point people to. It's a tool that lets apps use system-level APIs without root, by running a background service that communicates with the system server. You activate it through a wireless debugging connection, which means no bootloader unlock, no root, no Play Integrity issues. Apps like AppOps, which lets you manage individual app permissions at a granular level, or SDMade for cleaning up leftover files, they work through Shizuku without tripping any integrity checks.
It's like root access through a side door that Google is okay with.
Okay with is strong. I'd say it's exploiting a legitimate developer feature in a way Google tolerates because it doesn't break the security model. The wireless debugging connection is there for developers. Shizuku just uses it in a creative way. There's also the DNS-based ad blocking approach, running a local DNS resolver like AdGuard or using NextDNS with a custom configuration. You can block ads, trackers, and malicious domains at the network level without touching the system partition. And for those who want system-wide firewall control, there's NetGuard, which uses the VPN API to filter traffic per app.
None of this replaces the deep system modification that root enables, but it covers maybe 80% of what people actually used root for.
I'd say closer to 90% for the average user. The remaining 10%, custom kernels for battery optimization, system-level audio processing, full file system backups, those are real losses, but their niche. The mass market routing use cases were ad blocking, bloatware removal, and UI customization. All three are addressable without root now.
Which means the people still rooting in 2026 are either deeply committed to the principle of device ownership, or they're doing things that can't be done any other way. Custom kernel development, running servers on their phones, the hobbyists and the professionals.
The hobbyists are exactly the people who should be looking at the alternative OS route. If you're running a custom kernel anyway, you're already comfortable with flashing firmware and debugging boot loops. Graphene OS, Calyx OS, Lineage OS, these are not intimidating to someone who's compiled their own kernel. The learning curve is manageable, and the payoff is a system that respects your control without constantly fighting you.
There's another angle I want to touch on, because the prompt raised the game of catch-up framing. It's not just that Google is winning, it's that the game itself is rigged. Google controls the platform. They control the Play Integrity API. They control the compatibility definition document that mandates hardware attestation. They control the server-side block lists. The rooting community is playing defense on a field where Google writes the rules, owns the referees, and can change the rulebook whenever they want.
They do change it. The cadence of Play Integrity updates has accelerated. In 2023, fingerprint burns happened maybe once every few months. In 2024, it was monthly. By late 2025, there were periods where fingerprints were getting burned every 2 weeks. The Play Integrity Fix maintainers on GitHub have been open about the burnout. The project has changed hands twice in the last 18 months because the previous maintainers couldn't keep up with the pace.
That's not sustainable. At some point, the community just exhausts itself.
We're seeing that. The XDA forums, which were the heart of the Android modding community for over a decade, are noticeably quieter than they were even 2 years ago. The ROM development threads that used to get hundreds of posts a day are down to dozens. Some of the most prolific ROM developers have publicly stepped away, citing the endless cat and mouse with Google as the reason. It's not fun anymore. It's a chore.
There's a grief dimension to this that I don't think gets acknowledged enough. For a certain generation of Android users, people who came up in the gingerbread and ice cream sandwich and KitKat era, rooting and ROM flashing was part of the identity of being an Android user. It was what separated us from the walled garden. And watching that slowly get locked down feels like losing something.
I feel that, I really do. My first rooted device was a Nexus S, and I remember the thrill of flashing CyanogenMod and feeling like I'd unlocked something forbidden. But I also think we need to be honest about what Android was in those days. It was buggy. It was inconsistent. The manufacturer skins were terrible. TouchWiz was a crime against user interface design. Rooting and ROM flashing were necessary to make the phone usable. That's not true anymore. Stock Android on a modern Pixel or a recent Samsung is good software. The urgency that drove the rooting community doesn't exist the way it used to.
We're eulogizing rooting, but maybe what we're really eulogizing is the era when phones needed to be rescued from their manufacturers.
That's a fair way to put it. And the manufacturers, to their credit, did get better. But they also got more controlling. The two things happened simultaneously. Better software, tighter locks, it's not a coincidence. The same platform maturity that produced polished user experiences also produced the hardware attestation infrastructure that locks users out.
Let's circle back to the prompt's most anxious question. Someone who's rooted, discovered these issues, and wants a way back without breaking their phone. What's the step-by-step thought process?
First, identify your device and its specific fuse situation. If you don't know whether your device has a permanent hardware fuse, look it up before you do anything. The XDA forums for your specific device model are still the best resource for this. Search for Knox status for Samsung, bootloader warranty bit for OnePlus, or unlock status for Xiaomi. Know what you're dealing with.
If you've got a Samsung with a blown Knox fuse,
accept that Knox is gone and decide whether that matters to you. If you don't use Samsung Pay, don't use Secure Folder, and don't need Enterprise MDM enrollment, you can flash stock, relock the bootloader, and use the phone normally. Just know that resale value is permanently affected and some apps that check for Knox specifically, and there are some, mostly in the financial sector in Asia, will still refuse to run.
If you're on a Pixel,
easiest path in the ecosystem. Download the factory image from Google's developer site. Use the Android Flash tool in your browser. It's well designed and handles the relocking step. The whole process takes maybe 15 minutes and you're back to a fully stock, fully functional device. Pixels are the gold standard for recoverability.
The dark side scenario. What if someone is on a device where the manufacturer's tools don't work, or the flashing process fails, and they're staring at a black screen?
That's EDL mode, emergency download mode, on Qualcomm devices, or the equivalent low-level recovery mode on MediaTek and Exynos chips. The device isn't necessarily dead, but it needs a low-level flash using manufacturer-specific tools that aren't publicly available. Qualcomm's QFIL tool, for example, requires a firehose programmer file that's specific to the device model, and manufacturers don't distribute those. You're reliant on leaked files from repair shops, and that's a sketchy ecosystem.
You're downloading unverified firmware tools from random file-sharing sites and hoping they don't contain malware.
Hoping they're actually for your device variant because flashing the wrong firehose file can permanently corrupt the partition table. That's a true brick, not recoverable at home. At that point, you're paying a repair shop with a JTAG rig, and the cost is often more than the phone is worth.
Which is a bracing warning for anyone thinking about experimenting with Root on their daily driver. The prompt's final question was about recommendations. I think we've laid those out, but let's crystallize them.
For someone thinking about rooting today, don't, unless you're on a Pixel and you're willing to accept the limitations. If you must root, use a secondary device, an older phone that you don't depend on for banking, payments, or work. Keep your daily driver stock.
For someone who's already rooted and hitting the play integrity wall, if you're on a Pixel, flash stock and move on. If you are on a Samsung with a blown Knox fuse, accept the permanent limitations and find workarounds. If you're on anything else, research your device's specific recovery path before attempting to unroot, and be prepared for the possibility that full recovery isn't possible.
For someone who wants the control without the cat and mouse, Graphene OS on a Pixel. It's the only path that currently gives you both privacy control and full app compatibility. Or, accept the bifurcated life. A stock phone for daily use, a rooted device for tinkering. The era of the one device that does everything is over.
The thing that strikes me about all of this is how it's changed the meaning of device ownership. We used to say, I own this phone, and mean we controlled the software. Now ownership means you possess the hardware, but the software stack is effectively leased from Google, with terms that can change at any time.
That's the real loss, not root access itself. That's a technical mechanism. The loss is the idea that buying a device meant you got to decide what it did. That idea has been slowly eroded, and the play integrity architecture is the final lock on the door.
All right, I think we've covered the landscape. Should we do the fun fact before we wrap?
Let's do it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1920s, the Ethiopian Christmas hockey tradition known as Jenna involved teams so large that a single match in the Highlands could field upwards of 200 players, while on New Zealand's South Island around the same era, the entire population of some rural settlements numbered fewer than 80.
200 people on a hockey field? That's not a sport. That's a migration.
Imagine the face-off.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. If you want more episodes, we're at myweirdprompts.com, and we'd appreciate a review wherever you listen. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll see you next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.